We're back. Hour three. Doing my best to keep this train on the track. We've got, what, 52 minutes and got to fit a lot in. And Nick Tamburo is going to join us. We're going to look at the cross-country pick five and get any other insights in from Nick, who I think is there.
Indeed, I am. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. How was last week? And any feedback from the Jockey Club Gold Cup card and of course, the champagne and Queen Elizabeth? It was a good weekend of racing.
Yeah, it was a good weekend of racing. I guess the second of kind of the big two weekends prep-wise, and certainly saw, I would say, some above-average performances at Belmont, probably some horses that I think that'll end up being favored for their respective Breeders' Cup races. I mean, I would say that Jackie's Warrior is going to be a pretty heavy favorite, and I would imagine the day out of the office will be one of the choices. Everybody seems to be enamored with Princess Noor, who scores very highly on the visually impressive chart that leads to financial ruin. But she's a very good horse, don't get me wrong. I just joke. But yeah, I thought that, the Jockey Club Gold Cup was a dud on paper, and it sort of ended up that way. I mean, Happy Saver looked like he was done at the 3/8 pole, and he just kept on running. It's such a sin. What a complete just flop Tacitus is. He's always felt like a talented horse, and I know I mocked him after the Woodward, and I mean, arguably this was an even poorer performance because he set a slow pace, and I don't know if maybe in, you know, look, Jose Ortiz is a world-class rider. I don't know if maybe he has no confidence on that horse's back, and that is felt both directions. I don't, you know, think it'll end up mattering all that much as far as the Breeders' Cup Classic goes. I just think there are a lot of horses in there who are better. And Happy Saver and Mystic Guide both look like interesting prospects for 2021. I'm not really sure if they're going to be able to compete with the likes of Improbable and Maximum Security and Tom's D'Etat, Tis the Law in the Classic. But I think they're both deserving of a try, and so I'm not going to be surprised if they end up doing so. As far as the QE2 goes, I mean, obviously, I was very thrilled with the result, given that I was on Harvey's Little Goyle and thought that she was a very deserving winner, given how well she'd run on the turf now three times. And I think the question that you posed to me on Friday was answered quite summarily by Harvey's Little Goyle, that she's better on the turf. And it just so happens that she's a pretty decent horse on the dirt, too. So I think Bill Mott can have a lot of fun with her in 2021. And I imagine you'd expect to see her and ultimately in races like the Diana and in a couple of spots leading up to that, maybe Jenny Wiley, given her success at Keeneland. And if it's a conventional calendar, then I would imagine we'll see her get started again in the spring. I don't know if she'll run again this year. Probably not a Breeders' Cup horse, but I don't know. With it being at a mile and 3/16, maybe she is deserving of a try. She'd have to run a bit better than she has so far. But as far as the rest of the prep races go at Belmont, you know, Civil Union won a watered-down filly in Mare Turf, and I'm guessing at this point, I've not seen an update, but Sister Charlie seems like she must be finished, or she's training up to the Breeders' Cup filly in Mare Turf because she was not entered. Is she she's training up?
Yeah, she's training up.
Yeah, that's terrible. two and a half months. It's just ridiculous to run horses off that kind of layoff. But look, her trainer knows a lot better than I do. But we'll see. I mean, she's not run well in two starts this year, and is now going to come into the biggest objective of the season off a 10-week break. So we'll see how that goes. But I don't have a great deal of confidence. I really don't think the winner is going to come out of the Flower Bowl. I'm of the opinion at this point, and I hate the cop-out Breeders' Cup-wise, and obviously we'll talk a lot about the Breeders' Cup over the next 3 weeks. I hate being that guy that's like, well, I'm just going to bet Euros and all the turf races. But we have a particularly weak contingent of domestic horses for many of those races, so it's a situation, I think, where we're, other than the two-year-old races, we're kind of ripe for the picking as far as the mile and the turf and the filly and mare turf go. And a lot of that also has to do with the fact that you're going to be dealing with an early November turf course at Keeneland that's likely going to be on the softer side.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
And that'll work in their favor as well. So we'll see. I, you know, for that matter, Civil Union has turned into a nice horse. She's improved with each passing start and obviously has good patient connections on her side that have enabled her to do that.
Well, certainly, you know, you look up and down the list, the turf itself feels like, depending on who ends up coming, but feel vulnerable there. I'm not going to. I wouldn't write off Chad in the Philly and Mare turf completely by any means. It looks like Rushing Falls, Sister Charlie, and maybe, I don't know about Cambier after that. Then there's Civil Union, as you mentioned, Mean Mary, Bodicita. Yeah, well, you know what's going to be interesting is to see what Kevin Attard does with Starship Jubilee, who just seems to be, I don't know how you leave her off tickets no matter what she does. She's just amazing, and of course it's been very clear this week that Mo Forza is going to be a national American route for Barry Abrams when it comes to the mile, and nothing says he's not capable to impact that race.
I agree. It's been a while since we saw kind of top shelf milers come from the West Coast, but the last time the Breeders' Cup was run in Kentucky, we nearly had an upset from horse whose name I can't remember, who I cursed very much when he ran second in that race. He was a former Chad Brown horse that was trained by John Sadler, and he ended up running second in the mile behind Expert Eye. And so, yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible, and Mo Forza has been a nice horse. Obviously, Peter Miller's had a great deal of success on the Breeders' Cup stage, so it would hardly surprise. And I think there's going to be it'll be interesting to see who comes over, because there are some divisions where I think we are a little weaker than we've been. And I did omit Rushing Fall in thinking about that. And Rushing Fall is a horse that's just run so well at Keeneland consistently. And I'm glad they're going in the Philly and Mare turf with it being more than likely a slower paced race where she can get that good Rushing Fall style trip where she's close and stalks. And, you know, she's just one of those horses that you don't really want to get into a dogfight with, because she seems like the type who's going to find a way to beat you.
The horse you were reaching for was Catapult.
Catapult, yeah, it's not a favorite result of mine. About as infuriating as last week's Say It. So it was kind of one of those where the whole way down the stretch you think you're going to win, and then you realize you're not, and it's quite a humbling event.
Speaking of the Fayette, I didn't get a chance to ask Jay, but I'll ask you. I don't know if you heard me with Dale Romans, but when they crossed the wire and Dale was being interviewed, I think, by Gabby afterward, I texted him and I said, run him in the sprint. And Dale yesterday, or was it yesterday or Wednesday, unprovoked, he said, you know, somebody sent me a text about run him in the sprint. And I thought, that's nuts. And the more I've thought about it all week, the more it's not so. What's your thought? Could he compete in that spot, Mr. Freeze?
Yeah, I do think he could. I actually would probably like the cutback quite a bit. 9-6 is a little much. If it was 7, I'd probably like him even more. But, there's two angles on this, I think, and one of them is you firmly had in mind, which is, I mean, this is looking like a relatively weak sprint. It's getting a bit better as time goes by with horses like Nashville in the mix and Yopan and those types. But, I mean, the older contingent of sprinters is just a particularly weak bunch. So you have that, first of all. And then on top of that, you're dealing with a horse like Mr. Freeze, who in the past he had really been, it looked almost impossible for him to rate off of the pace and be effective. And, you know, whether it cost me money or not last week, he ran great in the Say It. I mean, he ran a very, very strong race, making a middle move around the turn and then staving everybody off. And you know, what you're looking at in a race like the sprint with him is probably settling around the 3-4 lengths off of it and making that one run. And, you know, quite honestly, on the Keeneland main track, I don't think you want to be coming from a whole hell of a lot farther back than that. And I think he can get, you know, a somewhat similar trip. Because the other thing is that he's not really, he's fast enough to not let them sprint away from him. So it would be interesting. He has not sprinted in his career, I think, since right around the beginning.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he's been a horse that Dale sent long right away, but I do not think that precludes him from doing so, and I think he'd be a pretty interesting cutback. This is a horse that I always felt like would be best around one turn, and I think he is best around one turn.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
So, yeah, I think it's an interesting prospect, and I think it's probably a better spot than the Dirt Mile.
I see that, and that, and a win or a board placement in that in the sprint means more to his career and his resume than it does in the dirt mile.
Right, exactly. If he wins the dirt mile, you know, he's standing for 10,000. If he wins the sprint, he's standing for 20.
There you go.
Plus, yeah, I think that's what it boils down to.
All right, we made the decision for Dale, and if Mr. Backey and Mr. Isbister don't mind us, you know, making this decision for them. Nick, let's dive into the weekend, and there's a lot of interesting places to go, but the pick five, the cross country, and we got to hit one of these or I'm going to stop playing it. It's gotten very frustrating, and there's no reason not to hit. I didn't hit last week in part because I left Shug off. I mean, which was just crazy. I mean, I don't know how I did that, but anyway, the Keeneland 7th, 8th, and 9th, and sandwiched in is the Belmont 9th and 10th. Why don't we do those five races?
Yeah, this is a really, really interesting sequence, and as you alluded to, this wager can get very costly, and this is one where it looks like you're going to have to be pretty well capitalized to take a pretty decent swing at it, as it lacks a horse that I think you can really sink your teeth into, unless maybe you've got a firmer opinion along the way than I do, which is always possible, but I mean, I guess we'll see, of course, as we go through the sequence. I guess there's one kind of possibility in the back end, not necessarily a horse that I trust, but the we can go in order. The Keeneland 7th kicks it off. Two-year-olds go in the Beard course at about 7 furlongs. And the interesting thing here is that you've got a couple of big pedigrees in the 4 Miss Dial, who's a daughter of Dialed In. The Dam was a 2-time winner, but she's dropped 5 winners, including Shalone, who nearly won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint back in 2018. And I think the pedigree that will garner the most attention is that of Wicked Bizu, who's actually the other Tom Amos trainee in this field, and she's out of the great-at-stake-winning Dam Diva Delight, who, of course, produced Midnight Bizu. And I would think with both of these horses, probably Misdial a little bit more so than Wicked Bizu. You're looking at types that are going to be better going longer. I think Misdial will probably be ready to sprint, but I don't really think that either of them are going to have a big problem going about 7 on debut. The experienced horses don't look like they're particularly impressive. I think 3 Tipsy Chicks will improve with a race behind her. She was 18-1 in a 12-horse race, and somehow Ian Wilkes is 0-27 at Keeneland, which
it's
I think
crazy.
Will be reversed. Yeah, be reversed pretty quickly. He's certainly going to have a big say in the outcome of the Raven Run later on in this card. But I thought in terms of other interesting horses that had started or first-time starters, Willful Woman is by Nyquist, whose progeny are winning on debut at a 13% clip. The Dam was a stake winner at 2, and they shelled out $400,000 for this horse. And obviously, the Lieblongs are owners that have had a lot of success with young horses, including with Asmussen having won the Frisette last year with Wicked Whisper. So I wouldn't be surprised if Willful Woman is ready to run on debut. Mm-hmm. And Hippie Cowgirl, who ran twice at Arlington, once against males, ended up running into a pretty impressive wire-to-wire winner named Smokin' Jay last time. Smokin' Jay came back and ran in the Fitzdixon Memorial at Presque Isle earlier in the week. And this filly is a half to both Destin, Vexatious, and Creative Cause. So there's a lot of pedigree here. And she's got some experience on her side. I know Owen Hardy doesn't inspire a great deal of confidence, at least on the dirt. But this is a horse, I think, that might just have a little bit of a leg up having run a couple of races. So it looks like a really tough spot to start it. I would understand some support for Dottie, who was bet down to 6-1 on debut. Granted, that was in a relatively small field. She was eased, but has come back seemingly to train okay. So there's reason to think that she'll benefit from having that race behind her. And I don't know what to do with the two horses who debuted on the turf towards the outside. I definitely would prefer thinking of the two, because I don't think it's all that shocking that Grand Motion might debut a horse that ultimately wants dirt on the turf. I don't think Steve Asmussen would do that. So it's a really tough and really interesting spot to get things started.
The Belmont 9th then interjects, and I don't have them in my lap in order, so I've got to go over to Belmont. There we go. And the Floral Park, the turf sprint for fillies and mares, and we're certainly hoping that this weather clears out and we can stay on the turf for this 6 furlongs.
Yeah, I mean, it may end up being the only turf race run. If it does, it's kind of surprising that the turf, that the Hill Prince was moved to Sunday, but a turf sprint was kept on this card. So I hope that there's reason to believe it can be run on the turf. Yeah, interesting bunch. And what these Belmont turf sprints bring together generally are a good mixture of sprinters and routers that are shortening up. And you've got horses that have probably been wanting to do this all along and are now getting the opportunity. I feel like this should be an honestly run race between Sunnydale and I'll Handle the Cash. I think you've got enough potential pace, even though neither of those riders are particularly aggressive. Sunnydale feels like a horse that really only has one way to go, and she's supposed to be on the lead, taking a big jump in class, but I read Ortiz getting on there. There are two or three horses I think that you have to use that I know I'll be using because I feel like this is a great fit for what they want to do, and chief among them is Rose Flower, who ran very, very well sprinting on the turf last year, including in that Autumn Days at Aqueduct, where she was totally locked in traffic until it was way too late, made a big late run, and then came back off the layoff. And I think Manny Franco feared the likelihood that Newspaper of Record was going to wire that field, and so he rode her a little bit early. But at 7/8, with her being in that kind of proximity of the pace, she was scorched. And she's a horse who needs to be able to lay back and make one run. How effective that will be on a, you know, on a boggy mid-autumn turf course remains to be seen, but obviously you've got the most trustworthy pilot aboard for this kind of horse. I want to use Zanzique, who I thought ran very, very well at 5.5 at Saratoga. I know she sat on top of a slow pace that day, but I think there's a reasonable argument that Zanzique has probably always wanted to go somewhere around 5.5 to 7 furlongs. And I actually thought she acquitted herself very well at Kentucky Downs, rallying to finish fourth behind Delica, who's a talented horse. So I would certainly want to find a way to get her on the ticket. And get Mother of Rose, who I think has always been a sprinter. And you know, Tom Bush has been in the difficult spot of trying to find exactly the right races to run her in, because she sort of threw a wrench into everything by winning the Honey Fox, the biggest, obviously, score of her career. And the problem is that she made it look like she might actually be a two-turn filly in that race. But I think she wants to sprint. I thought her trip in the Caress was bad, and I think she's deserving of another shot. And those three are going to be nowhere near favoritism. They're going to offer value, and they're going to be three that I certainly try to get on the ticket. Mitchell Road is the likely favorite, and she deserves it. But, boy, she's a question mark at 6 furlongs. I don't know. I don't know what to expect here. The turf sprints have never really been Bill Mott's thing, but she's dangerous in that she's got some tactical speed and can probably stay within range of them early. But I don't have a particularly good read on her, and quite honestly, I don't have a particularly great read on the race. I just have those three horses that I kind of want to fool around with.
Nice. All right, back to Keeneland. Let's go to the now I've put down the Keeneland stuff. Unbelievable. Where'd I put this? Unreal.
See, this is what I do every week, but I learned, Jesus, and I printed mine today.
Mine's all printed, very, but they're not in order.
I end up with the iPad, and I'm scrolling there like a buffoon the whole time you and I are on the phone, but I've actually, I may have no good information whatsoever, but I'm on my game print-wise.
You're ahead of me, because I try to keep it in order. Otherwise, by noon, stuff is like falling over the table.
You're toast. Right.
The third level allowance, the mile and the eighth. Marty didn't have anything clever. He settled with Norm Cassie with the 2-1 favorite. Don't blame Rocket. What else we got to use to get through?
It's amazing. There's probably going to be like three other thens run all year, and Keeneland can run one that gets a 12-horse field. And these are basically stake horses that are looking for slightly softer spots. The hesitation with taking a horse like Don't Blame Rocket and leaning on them too much is that he's such a pace-dependent horse. But I will say that I think the jockey change is going to be quite influential here, with all due respect to Julien Leperoux. I mean, he's allowed this horse to just sort of lose contact with the field lately. And I think that worked against him. Unquestionably, he's faced very solid horses in his last few starts. Obviously, the fourth place finish behind Ivar looks a lot better, with Ivar having come back to win the Shadwell Turf Mile. And last time out, I mean, he wasn't really going to have much of a chance against Digital Age or Factor This, and probably third or fourth was his ceiling in there. So he's strictly the one to beat. I hope that Tyler is a little bit more aggressive early and kind of puts him you know, more like the two or three lengths out that he was when he was effective in races like the E.R. Bradley and the Muniz, rather than where the way he's been ridden in his last two. As far as alternatives go, this horse might not be nearly good enough, but I love that he drew the far outside post because Chaguas is very fast, and he's really going to be able to get loose of this field. And I think having the 12, there's really no choice, and he basically has to clear busy channel. So if he clears busy channel, he's getting the lead in here, and speed on the turf in the fall at Keeneland is very so good. Deadly. Look at the 47-1 shot that won yesterday when you and I both bet the Declan Cannon horse that he butchered. It's just you want that was something. He's something else. I knew what I was getting myself into, but it was still bad. But this horse feels like he might be able to just bottom them out, and so he's kind of one you'd probably want to find a way to include at a big price, because there's really no everybody else is just sort of okay. Midnight Tea Time can win, but he's no great shakes at a mile and an eighth. He's probably better going longer, and he's going to be over bet. Counter offers a wet turf horse. Ritzy AP has a chance, but I think he's lost his form a bit, so why not take the favorite and a bit of a price, because you're going to need a leg or two where you try and get a little bit narrow.
I like it. Let's go back to New York and the fourth leg of the cross country. It's a state bred optional claimer, second level allowance, going 7/8, and this is a nice group.
It is a good field. I wish Playtone hadn't drawn the rail. I'd love to bet her on the cutback. I'm not altogether certain she's not a horse that needs to be pretty pace involved. That's when she's been most effective. But, yeah, you've got a couple of horses that got into really good form for Orlando Noda, who are now one is second off a claim, one is first off a claim, and the one that's second off a claim underperformed drastically in her first start off the claim, and I think that's what we're all expecting from Let Me Take This Call, who was claimed for $25,000 in March and went on kind of a four-race tear. Granted, she only won one of those, but improved significantly in doing so, and I think she's going to take a big step back. But she's going to be influential in this race because of the pace. And if she's able to move things along on the front end, I think that's going to set things up nicely for pretty much everybody else. I mean, this looks like a race that has to be run at a pretty strong early clip. And, you know, that'll help the likes of JC Shooting Star, who's back on the dirt and back in a similar position to where she was on August 16th when she got up at 10-1. 0-10 lifetime on the Belmont Dirt, but that also has a lot to do with the fact that she's run against significantly better in all of those dirt starts. So I'm going to be sure to use her. I'm going to use Playtone. And I'll probably take a swing against Jewel of Arabia, who was a week one other than and really ran poorly last time. Joelle getting back on is probably a positive, but I think this race is not really going to be run at the kind of style that she prefers. I thought Good Credence, as far as horses who are going to be bet, was a lot more interesting.
And we kick back for the anchor leg back to Keeneland for the Raven Run. A field of 10 and a lot of familiar names, and a lot of people are going to probably lean on Venetian Harbor and use a little Four Graces as a backup. Is that enough?
Perhaps. I was going to be a wise ass on Twitter and ask why Joel Rosario wasn't riding Venetian Harbor, but I didn't, because I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole. But maybe my humor would be lost on some. It wouldn't be a first. But yeah, Venetian Harbor's the horse to beat. You know, simply being able to run mid-90 buyers around one turn is probably going to be sort of all you need. But I don't feel like this race is going to unfold properly for her. You know, these horses are often a kind of a handicapping conundrum for me. You know, here's a horse that's always been effective on the lead, has never really been effective not on the lead, and what are you supposed to do in a race where she's not going to get the lead? Because, I mean, barring something unforeseen, Four Graces is going to be on the lead. And by the way, Four Graces ran a race in the Beaumont that, if she duplicates it, she's going to win. You know, I don't know if she's going to be able to do it against 9 rivals as opposed to 4, and probably a little bit more, well, maybe not much more pace than she had to show that day. There's also a reason to be concerned, given the way Monday Call ran at Pimlico, that maybe the 8 Bells scorched both of them. I like that Four Graces has had a little bit more time. I'm not really going to take that approach. I'm going to use her. I'm going to use Venetian Harbor. And I'll tell you who I think is a super interesting horse in this race, is Secret Keeper for Cliff Zeiss, coming in from California.
Yeah.
She was involved in a very, very hot pace last time that included Harvest Moon, subsequent Zenyatta winner, And she stayed in there gamely till the end. I think she made out like a bandit at the post draw, and if you get 10-1 or so on her, watch out, because she's going to be outside stalking, and Seiss is a small barn, but he's a very good trainer, and you know, if she's the kind of horse that if she came over and drew the one, I probably would just fade her, but having that 10 post and a heady rider like Hernandez, I think she's going to get a good trip, and I think she kind of could be the monkey wrench type in there.
Interesting, and I'm just going back to I wanted to go back a little one thing. So who the A's then?
There, I would just use the 2-5-10, and then I'd back up with really as many as you can afford, because I think there are reasons to believe that you would want to use Reagan's Edge.
Yes.
And who I think is just a kind of a classy and consistent horse, and is probably going to get a very good trip kind of right behind the pace players. And if you could afford it, I would use Secondary Market, who I thought had things kind of work against her in the Prioress, and I think in a faster paced race she actually benefits.
I'm glad you brought up Reagan's Edge, because she was the one that I wanted at 8-1. I wanted to include, and she'll, you know, I think she'll be every bit of that.
She's a good play in the exactas and tries too, because she seems to fire just about every time, yep. and I think she's going to get the right trip. But you know, Giroux wants to be in the front half of the field early, if not on the lead, and she's not going to be on the lead, but she's going to be close. And I think that, you know, I don't want to say that Keeneland is a massively speed bias track, but I just think on this main track you want to be in striking distance at the pace call. It's very hard to win from deep in the pack.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM1215. You got anything else? You got any other hidden gems before we go?
No. What I had, I certainly uncovered. Nothing hidden.
Excellent. I appreciate it, Nick. And we're going to start to get focused on Breeders' Cup. And, by the way, one thing I didn't get to, I was going to reach for you during the week. We didn't congratulate you on the terrific run you made in the contest at Keeneland Saturday.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it would have been even better, of course, without the aforementioned Mr. Freeze winning. But, you know, it's finishing. This is the second time in my life I finished 6th, 7th, or 8th in the Keeneland contest. And it's one where generally the top five spots get BCBC. I did also finish 6th one time and got a BCBC spot. But if Tommy Masses is listening, he's going to keep referring to me as Tom Kite. He said, because all Tom Kite did was finish in the top 10 at every tournament, but he never won. And he's right. But, you know, I will say that I would have won. Not necessarily would have won, but I was alive in a double from Harvey's Little Goyle to the favorite in the last for about 5,000. That horse obviously ran very poorly. I was never betting the Mishawish first-time starter. I just made a token bet in that race anyway. But yeah, finished 8th, got the second BCBC or second NHC spot, which this is my 7th time qualifying. So and it'll be my, I believe, 4th with 2 entries, 4th or 5th, 14, 15, 17, 18, 20. Yeah, 5th. So, not that it's ever helped before. I guess the one year I did cash, I did have 2 entries. So, we'll see. It'll be a completely different feel for the contest, but it's fun to be back. And I'm going to play the BCBC anyway. So, it'll be. I'm looking forward to it already.
Outstanding. Well done. And, of course, it'll be an unusual experience to spend Travers Week in Vegas. That's going to be a crazy part of this whole equation when it comes to this year's NHC. Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM, NTAMM, 1215. We'll talk next week. We'll stay right here. We've got not enough time to do what I need to do, but we'll spend a few minutes with Hammer, and then Paul Assanese is going to join us. The barn loves him. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning from sunny and windy California, and warm, which is not a good combination this time of year, but we need the wind to blow some of this stuff out of here, but not the wind. Not a good combo for FIRE, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Anyway, it's all good. You know, I real quick, I've been relegated to the garage office because we're doing some work in the kitchen. I was looking at this, I've got this on my wall here, and in here I have the programs of the 1978 Triple Crown with some artwork on them. And I was just looking at them; they're up, and I never look at them. And I was looking at the purses for the three races in 1978. The Belmont was 150 added, the Preakness was 150 added, and the Derby 125 added. Pretty wild, right?
Yeah,
Derby was the less of all of them. But anyway, just. First time I actually stared at him and noticed that. So, anyway, good to be back talking to you. and I know you've talked about Barry all week, and he's kind of full circle as I had mentioned to you or texted you during our segment last week. After we got off, because right before we went on, I had received a text regarding Barry that wasn't good, and I couldn't really, wasn't my time to talk, to say anything, but it had hit me, of course, at a bad time right before we went on, and I know I was rambling on a little bit, and I just, was able to come to grips with it, and it's been great hearing all week about Barry, people talking about Barry, and it's very cool when, you know, when you're in the horse racing business and you're talking about people and some of the stories about horses, but a lot of them aren't, which just kind of shows what a good guy he was. And I just wanted to get one thing, talk about one thing that about Barry besides all the good stuff. I think I tweeted something that a lot of people liked. He said it was a mountain of a man with a heart of gold, which he was. And, he's always had an entourage with him, a group of characters that loved Barry and they would bet together, but he was king of Del Mar. And, Santa Anita was great with the Clocker's Corner and the big thing going on there. But when he got to Del Mar, that was Barry's kingdom. His brother David, who was enjoyed all the festivities along. He would throw a party at the beginning of Del Mar, and he had a beautiful house near the track, and you would go to that, and that signifies the beginning of Del Mar. But Barry held court in his little table inside the grandstand past the finish line. He'd have a table there, and there'd be people sitting there all day long. Who knows who they were, fans in and out. But we raced 6 days a week there. And on the seventh day, which was Tuesday, Barry would operate a taxi service, him and his brother, down to Mexico for lobster. And he actually named a horse Lobster on Tuesdays. And if you were lucky enough to make the cut, you would jump into the car. And Barry didn't drive, but I know David would drive and someone else would drive the other car. And we'd drive, go across the border, like, hey, how you doing? Like they knew you. Hey, I'll see you. Go down to near Ensenada and walk, go park the cars and walk in and hey Betty, Senor Barry, and you would go in and I'm talking you would eat lobsters the size of your head, 3 to 5 pound lobster, and just sit there and eat and eat and eat and tell stories and drink margaritas and do all that, and then on the way home we would stop, of course, at the Internacional Boulevard in Tijuana and pick up anything you might need, and might be a stop at Agua Caliente to see if there was some dog racing or something else to see. And then we'd stop at Pete's in Little Italy in San Diego. So you got a full food day, and it was every Tuesday. And, it was just, hey, did you go with Barry? Yes. No, I couldn't do it. And, Jimmy made the trip one time, and he was even impressed by it. But this was Barry at Del Mar, able to kind of, I wanted to get a story in because it's just it was the way you had to talk about him. And of course, the services, they've decided to have a service on Monday, with the coming up the 19th at Forest Lawn at 3 o'clock. So I'm told that it's open, so which is great. So there'll be a big crowd there, but we move on. But that was just a chunk of history and a chunk of whenever a good friend goes, it stirs you up a little bit. But anyway, moving on from that. We're 3 weeks out from the Breeders' Cup. Most of the races have been run. Was very impressed last week with the two the two races we talked about, actually the 2 2-year-old races in New York, and very impressed by both of the both the colt, who's remains undefeated. I guess the filly is undefeated as well, and interestingly enough, based in Ohio, and then the second place filly Finista, I guess, is PA. But so we talked about it before the race, and coming out of it, we're going to have that. We're going to have that East-West showdown for sure. Then we're going to have the figures against the big people against the visual people, which is great. and we'll really get to see what Princess Nora does, and see if the filly that won that race is going to continue on. And I tell you what, just started looking at some of the Breeders' Cup matchups. Yeah, it's going to be a pretty interesting race. I think for this year, 2020, and all the goofball things, Keeneland is the perfect location to have it, don't you think?
In a lot of ways. I mean, there's a couple of configuration. I mean, listen, this is true of any venue. I mean, there's always going to be nuance to the way things line up, but that's fine. The turf course, and you say that, and Andy Serling the last week, he got me to print out the PPs or the charts from 2015, and I'm going to watch those replays too, and get a handle on what November at Keeneland that year it was. I think it was Halloween, if I'm not mistaken. It was the 30th and the 31st, but so it's a week later. And by the way, speaking of a week later, it reminds me, and I'm going to run out of time. Normally, we would have been looking forward to leaving after the show to go down to Far Hills. And we're thinking about, everybody down there, Guy Torsiglieri and his team that were denied their opportunity for the 100th running. It'll be the 100th running next year. And so there's a tip of the hat to Far Hills that would normally be tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. And that's a great run. That's a great run. Well, it's 2020. We just want to make it through, right? And then continue on. And you had the good news this morning about Naira, raising purses. I knew that was coming. And anytime purses go up, it's great for the game, for horsemen. And I like the little reward they threw in for the horsemen that have been loyal and stuck around and stuck through it. I think it's a great move. And there's going to be a lot of money being able to be run for this winter, as Naira raises it, and Oakland's will be right there, and probably even a little bit higher. It's good. It's just kind of rewarding people that stuck with the game, and it's great to see. We got stakes that you said stall applications close in about 3 weeks. We're out there, and that's good. It's going to be great racing there. Out here, not much going on. We got the Justified thing, of course, came down the other day, and it'll be interesting to see on the 29th how that all happens. It won't go away, but maybe this will be finally ended on the 29th. Racing here has slowed down a little bit. The three stake weekends are gone, so to speak, and we're finishing up. But there's some pretty cool races coming up. Craig Lewis, longtime trainer here, is going for his 1,000th victory. Caught that. I know he's got a couple in today, but he's involved in the two stakes, the two big stakes coming up with the Autumn Miss. He's got Warren Showtime in there. And, got a shot. Calbred's got a shot in here, 3-year-old fillies. I mean, she's done everything you could ask for, almost $500,000. She's second third in the grade one Del Mar Oaks. So give her a big shot in there. And then the Twilight Derby comes up. And Margo's boy, I mean, second in the Del Mar Derby there. It's going to be a price, so at least worth a shot. But anytime Michael Maker ships in, you got field pass here. I mean, it's almost an automatic that you got to include in everything. He's done a lot of things in a lot of places. You got to look at him and Michael McCarthy, who's just maybe not quietly, but slowly building up a very complete competitive barn on in every division, and he's got Smooth Like Straight in here, a nice 3-year-old colt who has done damage on both coasts as well. One at Churchill and there's one here at Del Mar, and as in all the races out here, all the stake races, you take a look and see where Pratt is or Rispoli is, and you kind of go from there. And they're involved in all these races, so racing does continue out here. Then we move two more weeks, I think, and then on to Del Mar. But starting to get that Breeders' Cup fever, and I know you'll be on hand there and filling us in. But that's pretty much it. What's going on out here? Not a whole lot leading up. But I think come Breeders' Cup Day, you'll see some good representation from California for sure.
Well, we're going to talk about California, and Paul Asanisi is going to join us. You must know Paul from his time there.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, we go back. We made some bets together years ago, and then he was a trainer for a while here. And he beat the trend. That trend being people bailing out of California as fast as you can, say California. He left about 15 years ago, took the family, and moved to, I think, North Carolina.
And, South Carolina.
Is it South Carolina? Yeah, South, North, South, what's the difference? But anyway, moved to South Carolina, did his basketball thing with the kids and the family, and, you know, turned out to be the right thing, and now he's, you know, that bug never leaves you, so it's good to see it. I've seen his name more in the last couple of weeks than I have in a long time. But say hi for me. He's a bundle of energy, and he's got some interesting stuff going on Twitter, like you said. So, like I said, I give him kudos for beating the curve. Everyone else here is going to be behind the curve, but a lot of people leave in this state.
Well, in fact, you know what? I think Paul's on the line now. Paul, you there?
I'm there.
That's Hammerly on the other line.
Yeah, Hammer's a great guy. He was assistant racing secretary when I was training racehorses. One of the best to be around. Love him. Love the Hammer.
Yeah, I was just hey, Paul, how's it going? I was just saying you beat the curve getting out of California. Now everyone else wants to leave, but you're out and settled. Good move.
Yeah, it was a great move. Thanks to my wife and her family getting me to make the move in right around 2009.
Yeah, so, well, I'm going to get out here and let you tell your story. It's great to hear you back. Maybe I'll give you a buzz here. We can catch up. But like I told Steve, it's good to see your name back. And, I'm going to punch out here, but I'm going to listen to see what you have to say.
Hey,
good luck.
Hey,
to you.
Hammer, you know what? The story you told about Barry's unbelievable. And then the other thing is, the thing I miss most is the camaraderie during the NCAA March Madness basketball pools you used to have. And just really miss seeing you.
Yeah, same here. And you know what? Shoot me your email. We didn't have the pool last year, but we will this. Well, there was no NCAA last year, but I got to get you back in the pool. But yeah, and Paul is part of that. I mean, I got told Barry had an entourage. It didn't matter who it was. Barry took care of us all. And
yes, he did.
Right, and just a wonderful man. But great to hear you. We'll catch up. Steve, we'll talk next week.
Hammer, I appreciate it, and we'll look forward to Hammer's visit. In the meantime, it's a delight to get Paul Assanese on. I've been thinking about this and looking forward to it, so I reached out about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, and Johnny D is the one who first tipped me off. He said, are you following The Barn Loves Him? And I said, no, I hadn't seen it, and so I pulled it up, and I started to, I started to see what you were doing, and it's so much fun, and you're obviously got a world of knowledge. Barn Loves is how to find Paul on Twitter, and you're putting in real work to help people, get a handle on the Southern California races, and it's more than just, here's who I like. You offer insights from your, vast experience. Talk about that experience before we do anything else.
Well, I mean, I was a race, I was a trainer from 1987 to 2009, but besides that, I just loved horse racing my whole life. I was brought up, my dad owned some horses with Bobby Frankel and John Russell, was around the game when Scotty McClellan had Frank Olivares when I was a young kid. Just really loved the game and followed it like a student of the game. But I was lucky to be around some of the best trainers when I was stable, and you watch their habits, and you watch everybody's habits. And you just start to see, when you're reading the racing form, when things, make sense, and it might be a 10 to 12 to 1 shot. And, it was just, I was just blessed to be stable with Bobby Frankel for 3 years, John Sherris for a year, Bob Baffert for 4 years. Maybe the biggest mistake ever is after he won the 6 Cal Cups, he lost his assistant, and he asked me to be his assistant, and we were such good friends at the time. I said, I just really like to stay what I'm doing. That's probably the biggest mistake of my life, right? And, then I was good friends with John DeSantis and Ron Anderson, and, I got to, buy and sell horses here or there. I did buy Star of Cozine, and I resold them with Ron Anderson to Barry Irwin and Jeff Siegel. I bought them from Lanamar for $80,000, and we sold them, Ron and I sold them to Barry and Jeff for 120. So, I mean, I've had a lot of insight of horse racing, all angles, really good friends with Gary Young, played in a lot of basketball leagues with him. You know, our one team was a great basketball team. We had Bob Ike, Kurt Hoover, Kent DeSormo, Paul Allen, Paul Aguirre, Gary Young, and myself.
Wow.
You know, we played in the men's league. So, I mean, it's just been a great trip. And I've been able to be stable across from one of the best female trainers ever, Janine Sahadi, and just saw how she developed as a trainer. I was there for about a year stable across from her. And, you know, just see all these people do such a fabulous job also gives you insight when you're looking at the form. I look at it at a different angle. I'm kind of like a profiler.
And,
so
and
that's a little bit of my background. You know, a little trivia. I was also, you know, Midnight Boost, whose owner, Jeff Bloom. I was his agent when he was a jockey.
How long did his was his career riding in the afternoons?
Well, it's the funniest thing. He was an excellent. I mean, Eddie Gregson and Cal King loved him. And there was a horse one day that we had to make a decision on between. We're just getting started between Eddie Gregson and Hal King, and we had given the call to Hal King. But Jeff said he really liked to ride the Eddie Gregson. But we stuck with the call. It was called Every Pole. And the Gregson won, and we got beat. We ran second. And, you know, we went to Fresno. He was the leading bug up there when he had the bug. I got in a bad car accident up there, and I left him at the end of the fair meets. And he went on for about another year, and then he, you know, just got out of racing and was, you know, not out of racing, out of being a rider. And he, you know, became an exercise rider and was just a fabulous, just an unbelievable young man. I mean, he's a lot younger than me, but I mean, he's older now, but just a great guy.
Did you see that? Did you see him catch the foul ball at the game the other night?
Yeah, he caught the foul ball the other night. I saw that on Twitter. I retweeted it. That his daughter sent it out.
That was great. That made me laugh. Obviously, Paul, we're going to be hard-pressed for time on this visit, but I wanted to introduce you. We got about 4 or 5 minutes, so I wanted to introduce you, and we're going to certainly come back to you for opinions on the West Coast. Let's get a couple of quick ones in, because it's actually the Sunday card is, I don't know how much work you've done on it, Sunday card is actually a little bit better than the Saturday card, but how about a couple of, you know, couple of Barn Loves Them thoughts? Thoughts going into the weekend at Santa Anita?
Well, on Saturday, the card is, what you said, a little spotty, but I thought there were some little decent things that I thought were in the eighth race, maybe leading up to the late pick three. I thought there was two horses that I thought were interesting. I thought Susie Q's brother was interesting, ran against Big Flame, who, you know, really good friend that I talked to still 3 to 4 times a week, Tim Yakteen. Really thought that was a talented young cowbred he had. And I thought this horse ran against, you know, that horse having experience, and the big cow horse that they ran third, Big Story. So I think this horse got bothered a little bit, really lays over this field. But then the other horse that is mentioned in there would be the number 2, Teton Valley. That horse, Brian Hansen comes back and puts a strong work in that horse. You know, his horses, they tend to run well, and he's a turf-to-dirt cutback. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he had a big say in the race. So really in there, I thought the race was 2 and 7 and 8 on Saturday, Teton Valley and Susie Q's brother. And then getting to the ninth race, I just thought, you know, Giddy, the number 4, is really his best race is a mile. I bet on him the day when he ran second at 19-1 in the San Clemente. She ran second. Then she came back and ran in 2 mile and 1/8 races, and I think she loses her punch in the 1 mile and 1/8 races. So I think she's one that I like. And then I think Warren Showtime getting Pratt. You know, it's no disgrace to the Hall of Fame rider Mike Smith, but I think Pratt just you know, got his, you know, just really on top of his game. And I think Mike got unlucky last time going 1 mile and 1/8. You know, that horse just made the lead too early and, you know, got run down. So I think Warren Showtime, the 5 horse, would be really tough in there as well. That would be my 2 square. And then the 10th race, it's a really interesting race. It's a maiden 25. But Saving Sophie's one of those horses that started 10 times and ran, you know, second 6 times. So, I mean, she's going to be heavily bet, and I probably would try to beat her with, you know, a few, I mean, just like horses, like the 3 horse for Hector Palma, You know, why did they bring a four-year-old filly that they ran for maiden 16,000 at Gulfstream all the way across to California, now in for the quarter, blinkers on the dirt? I mean, she interests me a little bit. Princess Tail dropping for maiden special weight, coming off the layoff, getting Rispoli marked flat. That interests me. And then, you know, the outside, the nine horse, Daddy tells the story of Jeff Mullins, another horse, you know, that they routed first time out. B&G Stables, you know, do put one over now and then. And I think on the cutback, he goes and gets his good friend Tyler Bays. That just interests me a little bit. So, I mean, that late pick three, there is some value, I think. If you can especially knock off the horse in the last race, you can maybe find yourself a nice little pick three.
You know, you mentioned the horse of Baltus, the five, the 4-1 shot, Save the Story. What's your opinion so far of what you've seen of Alexis Centino?
You know what? He sits really well on the horse. I mean, both Bug riders, when you watch XBTV like I do as much, and you get to see these riders, these Bug riders, and see how much horses run for them, I think this young man, Centino, is excellent. I think he put up some really good rides. I think he's starting to ride for some John Sadler, some live barns. And I think he's up and coming. I think taking the 7 pounds, and no knock on the Colony, but I think, you know, taking the weight with the way the Colony is right now, is probably, if you can't have Pratt or Rispoli, and, you know, Hernandez is, the barn loves him, touted him huge, because I always call Craig O'Brien, like, lumpy, because he waddles around, but he picks everybody's pocket, being such a, with his flip-flop. He's just a, you know, tremendous agent, you know. And, you know, Tiago Pereira with Patty Sterling's a dangerous combination. You know, so I do a lot of those things, you know. But I think Centeno's, you know, really, really going to have a good year with the 7 pounds.
And there's also, of course, you said the two Bugs, and the other Bug is the 10-pound rider, Jessica Pfeiffer, who got her first win, last week. And congratulations to her. And we'll talk more of this kind of thing when Paul Asanisi joins us. The barn loves them. Look him up at Barn Loves, and he'll be on the listing that I put out here shortly. Paul, first visit, and terrific. We'll check in with you with some West Coast opinions, I think, as regularly as you have time for.
Anytime you want me, Steve. I love the game. I love what you do for this game. And I have some stories, like I said, first time out. But I honestly believe this is what we're, you know, here to make this game better. I think it's, you know, we need to push it as hard as we can to keep it being as great as it can be.
Well said, and greatly appreciated. Paul Asanisi, first time, long time, sort of, or whatever that saying means. And we're going to get him back on with more opinions and with more insights. And there's your weekend preview brought to you by Oaklawn. And into the weekend we go. Best of luck, everybody. Back with you on Monday. I want to thank Marty McGee and Joe Applebaum, J.A. Goods on Twitter, Jay Privman, Andrew Hawkins, Hammer, and Tam, Nick Tamaro, and Nick Luck, and now Paul. Casey, of course, on the board. Talk to you on Monday, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
Lord, there goes a Buick 49. Black sheep of the angels riding. Riding down the line, we think there is a soul. We don't know. That soul is hard to find. Down the road, down the road. If you're after getting the heartbeat, then you don't go killing all the bees. Let the people say.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breeds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%.